Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Yeah, hi everybody.
Did your voice just crack?
No, I did that on purpose.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hi everybody.
Okay. Well, last week I did the Adam and Eve promo, so you do the Adam and Eve promo this week.
Okay. Well, Adam and Eve has lots and lots. AdamandEve.com has lots and lots of movies that will never be released on mainstream TV or network TV. And if you want one.
Subtle.
Yeah. And if you want one and you want to pay, I don't know, half price for it, you can go to AdamandEve.com, use the promo code STATIC. And you'll get 50% off of almost any one item that you order from there. You'll get free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs, and a mystery gift. Also, at 1201beyond.com, we have some Amazon links. Shut off your ad blocker. And if you go through those links, we get a little tiny portion of what you pay for. It's not that you get a discount or anything, but you get a nice warm fuzzy feeling that you're helping me keep the lights on.
I just still think it's so funny that you're like, and turn off your ad blocker when... When those ads were first put on the webpage, you send me an angry email. Where are the ads? You said they're there. I'm like, did you have ad blocker on?
You're like, hey, Josh,
no.
Josh, you bring that up every time.
Because I'm not letting you live that down because it's hilarious.
Yeah, but now it just looks stupid.
Yeah, because I'm the one that looks stupid in that in the scenario, right?
You are. You are.
All right. Well, you hinted at mainstream TV.
Right.
Or even just mainstream acceptance. Why do you think the genre is much more accepted now in the mainstream than it was before?
Well,
what has changed? And when I say genre, you and I argued about this before the
show.
Because
I have no idea. You kept calling it the genre, and I'm like, which genre would that be?
I've always seen in print the genre is horror, science fiction, fantasy.
Okay.
That's always just been called the genre. That's an old term from the magazines from the 70s and 80s. So when I say genre, I'm meaning horror, sci-fi, fantasy.
Okay.
Why do you think they are so much more accepted today than in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, where they don't seem to have that, you know, space is for kids, time travel is kids stuff anymore?
Because we're getting over all of that. I mean, again, let's go back to the roots of TV, to when TV really kind of got into the house in the 50s, let's say. Let's take a look at genre programming, things like Lost in Space, Space 1999, stuff like that.
Space 1999 was 70s,
well,
Lost
yeah,
in Space was 60s. So
I know.
What you're talking about is Twilight Zone, One Step Beyond, Lights Out. That's the 1950s kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, we had that kind of stuff in the 50s, but again... Let's take a look at the 60s and the space race when space was the shit. Like I said, Space 1999.
70s.
I know. But I'm talking about that era, okay? Not just one. You know what? Fuck it. Do the show.
Well,
what you want to talk about? Do the show.
I think it's funny that, like, you were talking about the space race, how Star Trek premiered 2 years before we landed on the moon. I think if Star Trek had come out after... we landed on the moon, it would have been a very different show. Agree or disagree?
Don't know. Do the show.
Oh, Christ. So, to me, the genre, I'm going to go back to something Scott said last week, actually, when we were talking about the evolution of porn, because I think he said it right. Our generation grew up with adult. We grew up with porn, so we're much more accepting of it today. I think that's the way the science fiction is today. The kids who are now the kids who from our era that are now in charge are the ones that grew up reading all the comic books and watching all the sci-fi programming and reading all the novels and playing the video games. I think it's a generational thing based on who's making the decisions, not what decisions are being made.
Okay. I would agree. I mean, again, my point was way back when they made space stuff, when they made science fiction, fantasy stuff, it was for kids. And pick your era. We whether it was 60s, 70s, 50s, you had that space, you know, the adventures of Captain Nowhere or whatever with the rocket on the screen against the rotating star background.
Clear string hanging off of it.
Yeah, you know. And then you stick with that kid stuff through the 80s for fantasy when you've got things like Dungeons and Dragons, the animated
83
deal. Then, hey, guess what? Not only is it fantasy, which is for kids, but you have a cartoon, which is for kids. And then
yet most of the audience was teenagers to young adults.
Right, but it was for kids. And that's just the way it was ingrained in society. We've talked about that ad nauseum between animation and the genre. And then you have things like Dungeons & Dragons, the board game, coming out. And that is a fantasy game being played in a basement, arguably...
By nerds.
By nerds or by kids. And by kids, I mean, you know, high school age, middle to high school
non-adults.
Age. Non-adults. And it's just, it's been that way for so long. Now we finally have a generation, actually a couple of generations at this point, that have had TV for pretty much their entire lives. My dad remembers a time before TV was popular. He remembers when the first television in... The county of Delaware was at Ball State, and people would go to the Ball State Student Center and gather in order to watch this little tiny TV that was up somewhere, just so that they can see TV and see what the big hubbub was about. And he remembers radio, and let's think of radio. Whenever you think of those great sci-fi adventures, none of them were made for adults. They were all made for kids.
I'll argue with that, too. Look at something like Wells' War of the Worlds broadcast that gripped the fucking nation. That was made for adults.
That was a rare thing. I'm talking about the series.
Yeah, you're talking about Captain Zero and stuff like that.
I'm talking about the series. Arguably, the space series were made for kids. Well, now we've had a couple of generations that grow up with that stuff, and...
It's not kid stuff to them.
Maybe they want to go, hey, I want to reach and grab my childhood again, but let's do it in an adult way. So you end up with things like Battlestar Galactica, both iterations of it.
I wouldn't call the 70s version very adult, but no. I think I get the point you're trying to make.
You get the point. You know, Star Trek, arguably family friendly, but...
Star Trek was, for its time, the first... mainstream, we're doing this space stuff and we're not talking down to you. I mean, it might seem like that when you watch them from a modern perspective.
Right.
Watch them from a 1960s perspective and you go, they weren't really talking down to you.
Right. And that's the difference, I think, is, games that we, Wing Commander and stuff like that, that we grew up playing, started out being a pretty simple space shooter.
I don't want to leave Star Trek for a second because you hit me on something here. Because when Star Trek was pitched, they didn't want it. Well, because literally NBC executives were, I think it was actually pitched to CBS first, but they were, that space stuff is for kids. We're not going to spend this kind of money on a primetime kids show.
Right.
So that's why Gene Roddenberry had to kind of, he had to keep comparing it to a Western. It's Wagon Train, but it's in the stars. And, he had to dumb it down for the executive so they would stop looking at it as that kids stuff.
Yeah. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about the Western frontier or
the final frontier.
It's all basically, It's exploration and it's a Western, but with green women.
But that's what I mean. That was the mindset that the people who were making the decisions were in.
Which
space is for kids.
Which is funny because if you go back even further, when you've got things like Gunsmoke and
Bonanza
and stuff, and a lot of, even Howdy Doody, a lot of that Western stuff was the stuff that generation grew up with and turned into something adult. With the spaghetti Western and things like that.
That's why I was saying this is very generational.
Yeah.
And which is why I think something like this is ingrained in our culture today.
Yeah.
I think it's because we grew up with that. Not just our generation, but the generation before who was watching these first run. They grew up with it, and then they showed them to us, where I can only speak to America here. We mainly got Doctor Who on PBS here, Intel Sci-Fi Channel, but that's the 90s. So we basically had this as, this was PBS, but I was shown this by my parents.
Sure.
Because they grew up watching these first run in, Christ, I can't, since it's a BBC show, I don't even know how these would have aired originally when my parents were watching them in the 60s and 70s in America. I don't know, because if the
PBS,
you think it was PBS?
It was
too.
PBS was the one.
I was thinking maybe syndication, because nope, that was starting up at that point.
No. There were very few British shows that were syndicated to the U.S. in that era, and there was no BBC America.
Well, duh.
And Doctor Who first made its inroads, believe it or not, here in the U.S. in its radio adventures, and the first Doctor Who to air in the U.S. was a radio adventure, and it aired on NPR.
Not surprising.
And then PBS picked up the old series. That opening you heard was the 1973 opening.
I wanted to go 89, but Scott was like, that's a little 80s-ish.
Yeah, that's not what PBS aired.
No, and, I saw those on PBS.
Yeah, I know, but they started with about the 70s era.
I don't remember a lot of the black and white ones, so I basically remember always seeing Doctor Who in color.
But nonetheless, so yeah, it made its way over here on PBS because it was still that British TV, and all those hoity-toity British people were, it was much too smart for the average American, so it never hit. That was the perception anyway. I know that look of, what? But,
No, to be fair, I don't think Doctor Who, now we're talking our era Doctor Who here, really did ever hit American mainstream. It hit the college kids, it hit teens, but it never hit, like, if CBS tried to air a Doctor Who in the 80s, it would have never worked.
Right.
So it still was relatively underground.
Right.
Whereas
until the Ninth Doctor, but we'll get there.
Right. And to me, that's kind of part of the problem and was the good thing. Back in the 80s and in the 70s, they were willing to take chances on a show that, I mean, a network show where you're spending $1 million an episode and airing it to 30 million people that you would never do today.
And we've talked about why. It's because, again, not so much choice, not so much breakdown.
I'm not so sure, though. I think there is... We talked about the people that grew up with this stuff, but there's also a bias from these same people who grew up hating this stuff. That now some of the people in charge are the ones that, God, I hate that space crap. I'm in charge of NBC now. I don't want that space crap on my network. I mean, hell, let's stick with Doctor Who. The reason Doctor Who was canceled in 1989, the head of the BBC didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was rating great. Yep. He didn't like it. I don't want that on my network.
Right.
And that's part of the problem. So I think there's a bias that goes both ways, Scott. They grew up with it, or they grew up loving it, or they grew up hating it. Yeah. And now that colors the decisions they make today.
For good or for bad, yes.
Right. Because, I mean, Scott and I were talking about some of the most batshit network shows we could think of. Now, this is from the 60s.
Yeah, this is the most batshit one that came. I mean, you mentioned it, but I was like, oh, yeah, that was nuts.
You had forgotten about it until I mentioned it, too, hadn't you?
Mm-hmm. And here is, it's a long intro, so deal with it. But
trust me, you'll like it.
That it's back, but believe it or not, my mother did decided she'd come back as a car. She's my very own guiding star, a 1928 Porter. That's my mother dear. She helps me through everything I do, and I'm so glad she's here.
the car. My mother the car. Yeah, this really aired on network television about a guy's dead mother being reincarnated as his car.
As a 1928
This is real. And not only, I mean, nowadays you would maybe see that done, but you would see it done as a joke. This was done as, we think Middle America is really going to get a kick out of this show and find it really funny and engaging.
It was done kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of, sort of.
But they thought it was going to work, yeah, too.
They knew it would play in Peoria.
And that's the kind of weird mindset that, I mean, like, hell, you brought up Battlestar Galactica.
Sure.
Look at what happened in that weird divide between sci-fi and NBC, both owned by Universal. During the writer's strike a few years ago, NBC decided to air Battlestar Galactica on NBC. So you're reaching arguably 3 to 4 times the amount of possible audience that the sci-fi episodes would get. Nobody tuned in. They moved it back to sci-fi and the ratings went back up. For some reason, people were like, I like that Battlestar show. I don't want to watch it on NBC.
Wrong audience.
Yeah, but I'm asking you why then? Why, pitching to a larger audience, do you have less turnout?
Because I think that the landscape of TV is changing, and I think the mainstream networks, they don't
get it.
Yeah, they don't get it a lot. I mean, look at what Fox did to Firefly.
Airing them all out of order.
Airing a very, very continuity-heavy show all out of order, and then going, well, doesn't work. You know, throw it on Discovery, which is an arguably smarter audience, and boom, it hits. Air them in order, and it's a huge hit, and it's a huge genre hit at the time.
But Fox has always treated their genre hits like that. I mean, Friday Night Death Slot, that's where every genre show went on Fox. And The X-Files was the fluke being a hit.
It's a miracle X-Files survived.
Yeah, and remember, it almost didn't. It was canceled after the first season until a letter-writing campaign, a la Star Trek, got it back for a second, and that's when it hit mainstream, was in season 2.
But let's, you know, and I think that because of the mainstream networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, shooting at an audience that is, you know, they're going for the lowest common denominator, whereas sci-fi is going, we're going for sci-fi fans, or at least they did at one point. You know,
we're not getting into that again.
Right. I think that simply because there are more choices and more, I would call it narrow casting or directed broadcasting.
Whereas, is that necessarily good or bad, though?
Yeah, I don't think it's either one.
Well, because I can see both sides of this, because I can see when you're not narrow casting. Let's go to ABC with the original Battlestar Galactica in 79, okay?
Okay.
By not having the options where, you know, you only had two other real channels you could watch, I think more people saw Battlestar Galactica and liked it than would have ever gone out of their way to tune into it. That these are the people that wouldn't have said, I'm going to go to this sci-fi channel to check out this new Battlestar show. They're like, this show is on. Let's check it out. Holy crap, this is really good. It gives you an audience that would not have sought you out if there were all these other options.
But I think today, because you've got so many different communication forms interacting with one another.
Like, I think to the point of a deluge, but that's my opinion.
Like the social networks, including Facebook and Twitter and such, meets, you know, when you've got all of your friends working through a social network to say, hey, this show is great, it's on this channel, I'm watching it, you should watch it too, then narrow casting is fine, because you're already being, you've got the word of mouth amongst that community.
But isn't that kind of preaching to the converted? Aren't you kind of just preaching to the people who are already in church?
Well, maybe. To many, but if I've got a friend who thinks that this show is great, I'm going to check it out. If I think it's great, I'm going to tell my friends about it. And my friends and I don't necessarily handle the same interests. There are lots of people that listen to Lost in the Static that think that I'm full of shit. And
it's more the more balanced the other way.
Well, I was going to say there's also lots and lots of people that think you're full of shit. But if I find a show that I really, really like, I'm going to throw it up on either our Facebook page, or I'll mention it here on the show, and I'll say, hey, this is a great thing, and I think our audience would like it. And I think that there is enough of that out there now that you're not going to reach as wide of an audience on your channel, but you're going to reach the right audience on your channel. And in order to broaden that audience, you depend on word of mouth. You depend on your audience to bring their friends and converts and stuff like that into the fray, so to speak.
And I see that, but I'm not sure necessarily that's a good thing. I would like the opportunity for, you brought up Lost in the Static, to be able to pitch a larger audience, and if you don't like us, you don't come back. But we're not able to pitch a larger audience at all. We have to go through the word of mouth. So is that's worse for us?
It may be worse for us, but I think once you get the power of a channel behind you, like the Discovery Networks or the MTV Networks or stuff like that, once you get that much power behind you, it works out in your favor. And again, I think with Lost in the Static, you're right. We do depend on our audience to go word of mouth. But let's be fair, we get the right audience on Lost in the Static. I've made friends of our audience members, which I think if we were a huge, gigantic hit, I wouldn't have the chance to do.
But I think there's a whole untapped audience of people who would like Lost in the Static, but because there are so many options, we're absolutely, no pun intended, lost in the static.
That's why I'm telling, that's why I think today word of mouth advertising is your only reliable source. And that's why I beg and plead, if you like the show, introduce it to some friends. That's all we can do is depend on that. And I understand where you're coming from. Gee, it'd be nice to kind of shoot out there to everybody and their brother, but we can't. And that's a reality. And that's a reality that TV executives are going to have to, you know, gee, it'd be nice if we could get sci-fi out to everybody and their brother back when it started. But we can't right now. So we have to depend on it to be great. We have to depend on our audience. And for them,
and then eventually we will shit on that audience.
Yeah, and then eventually we will, and then we'll throw a big Cleveland steamer on their chest and all of that. But
well, okay, let's swing back to the networks then. Why do you think then that the networks did take chances, even if it was a slim chance that, you know, let's face it, they knew was going to be canceled in five episodes anyway? Why do you think a batshit insane show like Outlaws ever got made? I mean, listen to this, guys. It's a little long, but listen to this, and then you tell me that you believe this ever actually aired on network TV for a half dozen episodes.
Sheriff Jonathan Grail was mad. We'd hit a bank in his town. Harlan Pike. Me, Wilson Lucas, William Pike, and Isaiah Ice McAdams, known collectively as the Pike Gang. Once been partners in crime with the four of us, but now all bets were off. The showdown was interrupted, however, by the Almighty, who sent us all sailing into the 20th century. And what a century it is. But we weren't what you'd call ordinary men, so we dug in, tried to adapt, and started a detection agency to put beans on the table, and in the process ran head-on into Deputy Maggie Randall. Things may be different this century, but there's plenty of...
So do you see a group of cowboys and a lawman from 1889 get transported to 1987 and become detectives? How is that not a batshit insane? How do you even as a network executive go, I really think this is going to play in Peoria. I really think this is going to catch on.
I don't know. It seems like a decent premise to me.
To me, it seems batshit insane that it might work on cable.
See,
I can't see when you need 20 million viewers how that premise would have ever worked.
But again, a different era when you had less choice. Less choice means more viewers. Period. End of story. If you have one network, you have all the viewers. All of them.
It's kind of the point, yeah.
Yeah. If you have three networks, you have roughly a third of the viewers over time, given it fluctuates, I know.
Yeah.
If you have 347 networks.
Or even just when Fox came out in 86, how that added that fourth. Now, assuming everything is split even, you go from 33% to 25%.
Right.
You know, at any given moment, that's the best you can really hope for since you're now competing against three other competitors.
Right.
So do you think that we have lost some of the chances due to cable or because cable basically requires narrowcasting, because it requires that, do you think people are less willing to take a chance or more willing to take a chance? And when I say people, I mean a network executive or the viewing audience.
I think they're much more willing to take a chance. And I think they're more, I think that promotion has to change and previews and such. And I think that this is an interesting deal that you can throw a video up on YouTube, see if it goes viral. If it works as a preview on YouTube, then you throw it onto a network, whether it's a mainstream network or sci-fi or history or whatever. I think that you have to rethink promotion. You can no longer throw something up on TV and go, let's see if this sticks, because people are like, eh? But if we're talking about the genre, let's take Space 2099. We're going to make this new series, Space 2099.
Sounds like a ripoff of Space 1999.
Well, that's what it is. It's a spiritual successor, but instead of going for that that fun kind of toyetic kids feel, we're going to make it for adults. It's going to happen in another century and you know, whatever. I don't care. You know,
the details are irrelevant.
But it's kind of like what they did with Battlestar. We're going to go from this kind of toy.
We're going to retool it to be more
adult and et cetera, et cetera. We're going to take this. Well, we shop it around. Well, NBC doesn't want it. CBS doesn't want it. Fox doesn't want it, or they want it for three episodes and then they'll air them out of order and cancel it.
I think what you're thinking of.
But sci-fi, hey, they're interested because that's the right audience. That's going to speak to who we are talking to.
I think what you're talking about, do you remember The Dead Zone? Not the Cronenberg movie, the TV series with Anthony Michael Hall?
Not really.
From the early 2000s based on the Stephen King book.
Okay.
That was made for Fox. When they saw the pilot, they went, no, we don't want this. So then it was offered to ABC. They went, no. Then it was offered, UPN still existed, to UPN. They're like, no. Eventually, USA picked it up.
Okay.
And they just said, well, we don't really want it either. We'll just air it and see what happens. Pilot turned out to be the highest non-sports cable programming in history. And you just kind of go, what does that say about the Fox, ABC, and UPN executives that, no, this won't work? USA picked it up and they kicked the shit out of us with this show that we didn't want?
We'll see again. Who has what audience? Who has the right audience?
But are you trying to say that USA pitches a different audience than UPN, ABC, or Fox when it comes to something like that? I mean, Stephen King's name attached to it?
Sometimes. I mean, seriously, do you think, what is that series? You watched that series like Matt. It was on USA. It was Burn Notice.
Don't get me off. Don't get me going off on the finale.
Do you think that Burn Notice would have flown on ABC, NBC, or Fox?
Fox, maybe. the big three, the alphabets, probably not. Fox, maybe.
Yeah.
Because
why?
Because Fox has, or at least had, up until about 95 or so, they were the ones that took some chances on, I mean, a show like The X-Files, I can't believe that actually got made.
Yeah.
Let alone, but, you know, the Fox, you look at that and you go, Fox is the only network that would have made this.
Right.
That, you know, this felt like a Fox show.
And I think Fox and USA have, they share an audience. I really do. And I think they still do to this day.
Well, then let's go a little bit different. What about something like The Sopranos being such a major smash on HBO? People right. buying HBO just to get The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's leave out the fact that it would have to have been a quite a different show. Sopranos was made for Fox.
Okay.
That was pitched to Fox, and it was written for Fox. And when Fox turned it down, they rewrote the script when HBO was interested.
I don't think it would have flown. I really don't think Sopranos...
Do you think because of it would have had to have been network safe?
Yep.
Or assuming the quality was the same, do you think a Fox audience would have accepted The Sopranos?
Nope. Because it would have had to have been network safe. You would have had to have cut out the cursing and the nudity, et cetera, et cetera. Just like I don't think Boardwalk Empire would fly on network.
I don't know if that was originally pitched to another... But like Sons of Anarchy on FX... That was originally made for Fox as well.
Yeah, again, I don't think it would have flown.
So you think the narrow casting in that case worked, whereas something like, there was a short-lived show on UPN called The Strip with Sean Patrick Flannery.
Okay.
It was about, you know, the Sunset Strip in Vegas. And when you watch the pilot, the whole time I'm watching the pilot, I'm getting this vibe of, and I don't know if I can articulate this, but a cable vibe. Okay. It didn't feel like a network show.
Okay.
And then when they beep out four times somebody says fuck, I went, right. This was definitely made for cable.
Right.
This was made for HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, or the movie channel. Whatever happened, UPN decided to pick it up, but this was made, and that you just get that feel.
Right.
You know, it felt like a cable show to me.
Okay.
And then when I heard the bleeps, I'm like, yeah, this was definitely made for kids. Same thing with Smith, that great Ray Liotta series from a couple of years ago, made for Showtime. Showtime is owned by Viacom. Viacom also owns CBS. They said, oh, this show is so good. Let's air it on CBS. Canceled after three episodes. Whereas I think if it were on Showtime, it'd still be on.
That's where I think narrowcasting plays its part, especially if narrowcasting means you get a little bit more freedom. HBO, we can be a little bit more adult. Showtime, we can be a little bit more adult. We don't have to bleep. We can show the boobies. We can show the bush, whatever. You get a little bit more freedom as a writer. You get more freedom as a series, and it plays well. Again, just like Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire, et cetera, et cetera. True Blood, I don't think True Blood would survive at all if it had to be cleaned up for network air.
Oh, Dexter was a perfect example of that. During the writer's strike, they took the Dexter episodes from Showtime, again, yeah. owned by Viacom, aired them on CBS.
Nothing.
Not only did you have to cut 15 minutes of content, you had to cut all the violence, or not the violence, the swearing, and you just kind of go, why did you think a heavily censored Cut to Hell Dexter would appeal to mainstream audiences?
This good show has been gutted, and that's where I think narrow casting works. I think that a sci-fi series that plays
now, do you
on,
say sci-fi as genre or sci-fi as sci-fi channel?
Sci-fi as genre.
Okay, because they call them sci-fi series now, so I need clarification.
A sci-fi genre series that plays on sci-fi channel can move at a different pace and maybe be played out and get its chance to be a really, really good series because it's talking to the right audience. However, a sci-fi genre series that plays on NBC, CBS, or Fox, which live and die by, is this a hit now or is it a flop now? I think look at Lex. It's not a really good series. To me,
it's an hour killer.
It's an hour killer. It's not really my cup of tea, but I know lots and lots of people who are huge fans of Lex, and it's a very slow-paced,
very British.
It has a very British feel to it, but this slower paced, almost character drama, rather than an action and sci-fi thing. That wouldn't have flown at all on standard network TV, but on sci-fi, it found its place.
But to a degree, now maybe we're talking show specifics here. Look at like when you and I worked at Channel 26, which also was running Channel 32. Stargate Universe and Stargate Atlantis, those both did huge numbers in first or in second run syndication. They did numbers in some cases better than their sci-fi channel airings. So why in the case of like the Stargates, do they get better ratings on a UHF, you know, the equivalent of a UHF channel than they do on their original sci-fi channel runs?
Maybe in their case, the cut down versions were a little bit better.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's show specific. In the Stargate case, maybe reaching that wider audience did work.
Because, well, reaching that wider audience did work a little bit, and they changed the pacing of the show.
Because they had to cut a couple of minutes out.
They had to cut some time out, and so the pacing picked up. It was a little bit quicker, and I think that spoke to more people. I think even people that really liked the longer versions enjoyed the pickup of the pacing. And I think that's show specific, and I think that's a rare thing.
Because I remember even the network guy or the studio guys we were talking to were surprised at the ratings for when the Stargate stuff happened. They were like, "This show is doing great.
Yeah,
we just bought it because no one else wanted it."
Yeah, and I don't know. Like I said, the pacing changed. That's a show specific kind of thing.
But then do you think the networks have always been so quick to dump genre when they might not other eras, such as like this show, which is one of the biggest flops of 1983. Manimal.
Oh, good old Manimal.
Manimal was a monster flop and also incredibly expensive due to all the morphing and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah.
It's 1983, dude. Don't laugh. That was new and expensive, okay?
I know, but I'm still laughing. but this again was 1983. They were taking a chance. And I think back then, networks, because there wasn't so much choice, they were willing to take a chance and give it a go. Now, not so much. They want something that appeals to the broad base, that gets eyeballs now. That's why we have so much reality TV, so much contest TV.
But I think back then, even they saw that someone needed to cater to the geek audience.
Yeah, and I think from an executive standpoint, it's, you know, we should do this because nobody else will, and we'll get their money and their eyeballs.
Well, and you got to realize the geek generally is right into that perfect demographic that advertisers want.
Usually.
Generally. So that's why I'm always surprised when they would greenlight genre series and then so quickly cancel them when, like, even Star Trek proved you have to give a genre series time to build its audience.
And I think that is something that the audience-specific channels, that the narrowcasting does better than the big networks, because the big networks don't have the money to do it. They don't have the time to do it. They are scrambling and, in some cases, failing badly, NBC. They're failing to get the eyeballs they need to stay alive.
Well, we should have played Doctor Who earlier.
Sure.
And I know you're a much bigger Doctor Who fan than I am, so you can probably get into better specifics. Why do you think then New Who, which was what, 03, 04 that came back, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 04, 05.
Okay, I'll just say early 2000s.
Yeah, early aughts.
So when New Who came back, why do you think that hit so much bigger than Old Who? And I'm saying Old Who being 89 through, you know, the PBS stuff we talked about. why do you think that hit an audience that would have that laughs at the 1989 Doctor Who? Do you think it has to do with arguably the more professional production values that New Who has, rather than the, let's face it, cardboard looking sets of even
the sets they could afford? Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, we enjoy Doctor Who, but you got to admit, 70s through the 80s, they looked goofy.
Doctor Who is an interesting case because you have two generations, basically, of Doctor Who, of Whovians in the UK growing up, sharing memories of hiding behind the couch and then having their kids hide behind the couch because who was that scary? And it goes off the air in, what, 89? And
unless you count the 96 Fox TV movie.
What, I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you one of those ones that refuses to recognize that?
I don't.
That movie actually is in continuity, though, Bucko. It's referenced in the New Who series as one of his iterations.
I don't know what they reference.
The 1996 Fox TV movie where Eric Roberts is the master is actually part of continuity. But no, I'm not bringing that up as a side thing.
But nonetheless, you've got basically from 89 until 05, you have no Doctor Who. And then these kids who have grown up and remember hiding behind that couch and remember it being a great series and maybe sharing reruns with their
parents
kids
now.
Maybe sharing reruns with their kids. Hey, there's going to be a new Doctor Who. Sweet. Hey, they're going to use modern production systems. Modern production
CGI
techniques.
And
they're
going to
use CGI
screen.
And they're getting this great actor named Christopher Eccleston who had a good reputation prior to being Doctor Who as a decent actor.
Actually, most of the Doctors were pretty well-established actors before they became the Doctor. Really.
In many cases. So
to me, that's not new.
May not be new, but it's a tradition that they're bringing from the old show. And so, and then you find out who the writers are going to be, and you go, oh, great.
Okay, I got two questions for you, okay? So don't let me forget to ask a second one.
Okay.
I wasn't being a smartass when I brought up the 1996 one. I wasn't just trying to interrupt you and be a smartass. That is a perfect example of Fox thinking there's an audience for this. But they told... Have you seen it?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Non-jokingly?
Yes.
It's Foxified, isn't it? It's very American. It's got drive-by shootings and slapstick comedy. And I mean, like I said, Eric Roberts as the master. Why do you think that they thought... And keep in mind, I kind of like it on a certain level, but it does kind of piss on everything Doctor Who was up to that point. Why do you think they thought the Doctor Who fans are going to love this?
I don't know. Because Doctor Who fans and fans of the original BBC series and the current BBC series are fans of it here in America, partially because it's British, partially because it's very different, partially because...
It's foreign.
It's foreign. It's the same thing as Monty Python. Monty Python... starring American actors would not play nearly as well as it did.
Well, that's what I'm asking. The Fox executives.
You look at the name and you look at the reputation and you go, hey, if we make this American, it's going to be a wider audience. It's going to, not only are the fans going to love it, but they're going to drag in new people. It's got a built-in audience to it. And then they shit on what it is. And they're like, why? It's because they're idiots.
But then, and this is not the second question, but then why does the New Who make that still part of continuity, even if everybody hates it? They're like, you know, you were pretending like, I don't know what you're talking about. That does not exist. Yet it is part of your continuity.
Because it is. It's one of those that you accept as continuity because...
Begrudgingly.
And it has its fans.
I enjoy it as kind of an, this is why you don't Americanize Doctor Who,
And that's one thing. Disney was talking about making a Doctor Who movie.
Oh, hell. Torchwood, the final one, Miracle Day.
Yeah.
The one that was co-produced by Americans.
Right.
It doesn't feel like... I mean, Torchwood's stupid to begin with. I'm not a Torchwood fan, but It doesn't feel like Torchwood. It doesn't feel like Torchwood, does it? It feels like an American version of Torchwood, doesn't it?
In many cases, yes. In many cases, yes. I don't think Miracle Day is that bad because
Children of Earth wasn't too bad.
I don't think Miracle Day was that bad because they did. I mean, they did have enough British people there to go. No.
No. To me, Miracle Day was a bunch of great ideas that we didn't know what to do with.
Right. But anyway.
But then my second question was, why do you think with Doctor Who 1996's failure, why do you think in early 2000s?
Why did it delay it another 10 years, roughly?
No, no. Why do you think all of a sudden then it was decided that Doctor Who can come back? You know, it's sort of the same way, like, and because I don't want to make it a total Doctor Who, but we'll use that as the example. You know, why they thought Battlestar Galactica can totally work in 2003.
Sure.
You know, what do you think was the impetus in Doctor Who's case that in 2004 or whatever it was that they said, I think it's time to resurrect the Doctor?
Because you had...
After 96's failure.
Because you had a bunch of new people coming in and taking over and going, we can do this right. And because it was the BBC. And the BBC went, we can do this right.
What about then Torchwood, Sarah Jane Chronicles, you know, the spin-offs? How did it, no pun intended, spin off to become bigger, arguably, now than it ever was at the height of its original run heyday?
Because, again, you're playing on the nostalgia factor. You're playing on... this series ended in 1989. And still had young fans in 1999. Had fans that weren't alive in 1989 that were fans in 1999. It had fans in, you know, prior to the new Who, you had this fan base that was just rabid. And it was a really big chunk of the UK that were rabid Doctor Who fans. And you had a growing...
Oh, the VHS sales were insane for the originals.
And you had a growing fan base in the States. Even though no new episodes were being made, you had a growing fan base in the
United
States.
You still had new material, though. There was a comic book series that was still putting out new material in that interim. Do you think that fed into it?
Partially, yeah.
I think there was a series of novels too, but I don't know if those were just...
Oh, there were novels. There were radio.
Well, I just
shows,
can't remember if everything. The novels were adaptations of episodes or if they were new adventures. I'm not sure.
Both.
Okay.
There were both out there. Audio dramas. You had new adventures and old ones.
Let's say there was no comic books. So there was no novels, no audio. That it was just 1989. It ended. 96, they tried to resuscitate it, didn't work. I'm going to hammer out the number 2004 just for the fuck of it. 2004, do you think that all that stuff in the interim worked it up?
I don't know, because...
Stoked the fire, if you will.
I didn't read the novels.
I've never read them, I've just seen them on the shelves.
Right, I have just started listening to some of the audio adventures. I was a Doctor Who fan still. Reruns on PBS. I mean, I can't tell you, I can't predict really what would have things been like had these not happened. All I can tell you is that did the stuff in the interim promote? Yeah, I mean, that's what it does. But I guess the answer to that is I don't know, because I can't go back in time and not do that stuff.
Well, then what about something like Battlestar Galactica when that came back in 2003? I don't know any specific reason that they said in 2003, we think this will work. It, you know, failed arguably in 79 and 80. We think it'll work now. Or even with all the remakes, like why all of a sudden now they're talking about, you know what would make a good TV series? That 1988 low-budget movie, They Live.
Because I think people are playing... They're still playing...
You think it's all nostalgia card?
I think a huge chunk of it is. I think a gigantic chunk of it is.
Because that's what I seem to understand from the network level. Like, you know, something like NBC, they would never air something like a They Live TV series, but Sci-Fi Channel would do it. but they'd say we don't want to do it right.
Then, no, I think a lot of this is, I mean, thinking like a TV executive, we have a property with a built-in fan base, given it's small. Let's say,
but it's loyal.
Let's say we talk about My Mother, the Car, which has no fan base.
I was going to say that's not a great example, yeah. Scott.
Didn't have a fan base at the time.
Nor does it now.
Does it now? But let's pretend that there was a relatively small but loyal, rabid fan base for My Mother, the Car. We have the power now to take that small fan base, get that false small fan base excited. And through, again, the all-important social network of Twitter and Facebook and blah-de-blah and blah-de-blah and Google meetups and a bunch of other stuff, you know, to get that excitement out there, and they will get their friends and their friends' friends and et cetera, all worked up over this coming. And whether it's a hit or not, you have a built-in fan base right then and there.
Well, then what about when the opposite happens? What about when the fan base is clamoring for you to bring back a show or to give you a TV movie or something, and the networks just go, you don't matter?
I don't know. I can't get
inside
their
head that well
enough.
Because that's the exact opposite of the argument that you just said also happens, that where they go, it's a small, loyal fan base, but it's not worth it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know how they think.
I mean, they've been trying to get a Firefly TV series brought back for a good 3 or 4 years now. I've been seeing this, and it's got millions of signatures. You would think, let's just say for the sake of argument, Fox still owns it, that Fox would go, there's money here. But they're just going, whatever. Whatever. I don't care.
I don't know. I can't get inside their head. I don't know why.
I'm asking your opinion as Scott Murray, not their opinion.
I'm a brown coat. I'd bring it back with, you know, in a freaking heartbeat. But even when you have the actors even going, yeah, I'm all for it. Let's do it. Let's do it. But then...
A ravenous fan base. But the network just, we're not interested. Just quit. We're not. I don't get that, man. I don't.
That's also a curse of Joss Whedon, though. Because Dollhouse had a rabid fan base.
Much smaller, but yeah.
Much smaller, but it had a rabid fan base. And it was still a failure. Maybe crunching the numbers, they're going to go, you know, even this may still be a failure. I don't know.
Sometimes it works. Look at Family Guy. Family Guy was done.
Yeah.
And then the DVD sales came out.
Yep.
And they went, shit, they're still on. And it's been 8 years since that happened, something like that.
Yeah.
You would think that would happen with Firefly.
I'm surprised it hasn't, and I don't know why. I honestly don't know why.
And especially in my opinion, after Avengers hit, you'd think Joss Whedon would be able to do any fucking thing he wanted. Yeah, as much as I hate the guy, you'd think he'd be able to just walk around in a restaurant and put his dick in your coffee, and you'd be like, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I don't know why. You gave me this look like after you said it, you were like, what?
Yeah, okay. depends on his dick. I've never seen it. You would think that somebody would be like, here's some gold leaf for your typewriter, sir. And I don't know why. I don't know. And you can even ask, I've even talked to people who are not fans of Firefly. I've talked to people who hate it, and they're like, I don't know why they didn't bring it back. I have the faintest idea.
Yeah, it just, the network executive mind, when it comes to the genre, seems to be very split. You know, kind of the way Paramount always hated the fact that Friday the 13th, that series, was their sole moneymaker. That they would lose money on all their Oscar-winning pictures, and Friday the 13th would always fill the coffers. They were always ashamed of that.
Yeah, it's just the way, I don't know. If I ran a TV network, it would be very, very, very different, but
it would also probably be unsuccessful too.
Probably,
because our programming probably wouldn't work. But it'd be fun. It'd be fun for a little while.
It'd be fun for a little bit. Ooh, get in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/lostinthestatic, and
1201beyond.com.
Check out our Amazon links. Shop through them, et cetera, et cetera. We've got holidays coming up.
Whether
you're shopping for Halloween, or Thanksgiving, or Christmas.
Just play the clothes.
Anyway, we will talk to you guys later. Thanks a bunch for joining us. We'll see you all next week. Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.